And also keep an eye out for an upcoming exhibition on, photo exhibition on Afghanistan, Paula Bronstein's Between War and Peace. Paula is a Bangkok-based photographer for Getty Images, and these really are stunning pictures that we'll have up down in the main ball, on the main bar, on the Van Ness wall. Exhibition runs from Tuesday, June 8th, but I believe the pictures will be hung this weekend. Today, it's very happy to see gathered in this room so many foes, by which, of course, I mean friends of Ed. Those of you who know Ed well will know few people can pack a room better than he. In fact, it's been about a year since he was here to launch the Photographic Heritage Foundation. And we're really pleased to have him back a year later to talk a bit about some of his more recent works, and also the ongoing work of the foundation. I think most people here will have known Ed since the publication of his first remarkable book on Hong Kong, Hong Kong's Wild Places, in the mid-1990s. That was translated into Chinese, San Soi Yao Cheng, and this is something he's done with a few of his books on Hong Kong and Hong Kong heritage, and part of Ed's ongoing effort to really share his work with the entire community in Hong Kong. I suppose it's a bit sad that clean air and beautiful landscapes are in some ways part of our heritage, more of our past than our present. But maybe that's a question for later in the session. Ed, thanks very much for coming to the FCC today.
It's a great pleasure to be here. Can you hear me at the back and on the veranda? Tom's introductions are always most kind. It's almost like a double act, the Tom and Ed show. As he said, this is a return visit to the FCC, and about that, the foundation and I myself are very glad. Members of the Foreign Correspondents Club, foundation guests, friends, ladies and gentlemen. Could we perhaps have the lights down a little bit? Humans come and go, but if we give them their due, natural landscapes endure through the centuries. During the Six Dynasties period, the poet Zi Lingyun reflected, "I watched the morning clouds swathed around the range. I listened to evening torrents rushing through the gorge. Rocks lie strewn here and there like chess stones. I scramble over them, marveling at them." In Hong Kong, hiking through the uplands, around the coasts, along the streams, I often marveled at its natural treasures, as no doubt do many of you here today. This year marks the 100th anniversary of railways in Hong Kong. The KCR line can be seen here skirting Sha Tin in 1946. Since then, despite great urban development, Hong Kong's uplands, except for the disappearance of village farming, remain virtually the same, plus some reforestation. But today there's regular easy access to that country by rail and other transport. Ma and Shan, seen here, enshrines, I believe, the value of landscape and nature in Hong Kong, with ecological, geological, topographical, scenic, and recreational values, all now protected within Ma and Shan Country Park. The Photographic Heritage Foundation faces the startup challenges of any small not-for-profit body, and we welcome greatly the belief, enthusiasm, and support of others. So first, if I may, a few words of thanks to our chairman, Helmut Hennig, on the middle table, and our board members, Peter O'Hearn, Lindsay Esler, Robert Shum. Dr. Helmut Soman, our founding benefactor and a great steadfast friend. Deacons are honorary lawyers in Hong Kong, and Alan and Gledhill the same in Singapore. Jebsons, who have assisted greatly throughout. The Design Associates, led by Victor Chang, absolute bedrock of our book's design style, identity, and meaning. And our Chinese translator, as Tom said, we really seek to translate our books, including this one, Word Power Language Services, and Jennifer Chan. Over many years, other organizations have assisted greatly, amongst them the Country Parks at AFCD, Kadiri Farm and Botanic Garden, the University of Hong Kong and its libraries, and of course our partner publisher, Hong Kong University Press. Individuals have helped greatly too with time, interest, advice. All are named in the book's credits. Do please read them. But without repeating the names here now, you know who you are. I thank each and every one sincerely. The Foundation has pleasure in thanking the Swire Charitable Trust for a recent kind donation. Finally, the Foundation's great thanks go to MTR Corporation and the Kowloon Canton Railway Corporation for their partnership and support for Hong Kong Nature Landscapes. And we're delighted that James Blake, with others, is here representing the railways today. With country park rangers, a searing day on Patsin Leng, helping with my gear that at this stage I couldn't manage alone. The rangers, the country park rangers, as I came to know them well over many years, do absolutely sterling work for Hong Kong. Lama Channel from Lama, where I first lived in Hong Kong. Hong Kong's nature landscapes, as I came to know them, hold great value, interest, and delight in their ecology, in their flora and fauna, topography, landscapes, and heritage sites. Besides those intrinsic values, they offer opportunities for recreation, education, indeed for social cohesion in so crowded a place, and also for tourism, if only the authorities realized it. I don't intend to quantify these values. Indeed, I doubt one can. But I hope the book's images, primarily speaking for themselves in this presentation, will support my belief that Hong Kong is truly blessed by its setting, a touchstone for the things that matter most in life. Yes, Hong Kong does have environmental challenges, both urban and rural. Some are described in the book. Air pollution, above all. The infilling of valleys, other aspects of lowland degradation, and that perennial blight, photographed so much by myself, marine rubbish lying around the coast. Lapsat, it surely has staying power. We might even miss it if it were gone. However, those concerns aside, bar air pollution and marine rubbish, the issues bar air pollution and marine rubbish affect the land outside the country parks. By contrast, the photographs here, except those of Kadiri Farm and some of the islands, all portray land inside the country parks, where well-considered conservation is the rule. Moreover, given the short time and the risk of some misconstruing through lack of context, I'm not going to mention anything about those issues, but feel free to talk about them in the questions. Indeed, let's celebrate Hong Kong's nature landscapes, the places I was fortunate enough to record during my excursions over 10 years. The best of wild Hong Kong, photographed for previous books, now brought together in this personal summation. Besides presenting photo narratives, our books also try to elucidate and inform people about photography for their own interest and particularly for amateur photographers. Again, I'll say nothing about that because of time, but of course anybody ask me in questions or chase me later, I'd be more than happy to tell you. And the details, the precise details of every image are in the book, of how each image was taken. So let's explore Hong Kong. First Hong Kong Island, then the Northeastern New Territories, Kadoorie Farm, Wilson Trail, and the islands. Sheko. In 1893, the New Territories were still part of Qing Dynasty China. That year, Sidney sketchily enthused, "Climb with me some 1,400 feet up to the gap by the peak and find language to describe the scene of cliff and scar and winding bay, of hill and vale, of mountain and island and rock, visible on either hand." And so it really is today. Here on the Dragon's Back, a delightful place, a crystal clear summer day. Or here at Wong Nai Chung Gap, Violet Hill, where I'd slept the night with an Australian friend from inland Australia who could not believe that countryside could be so close to a city. Or Tai Tam, a place of childhood memories, most beautiful under drizzly light as here, rich with heritage of many areas of Hong Kong, not least the reservoirs. Can this really be just 500 meters inland from Aberdeen, the crowded, bustling streets of that fishing community? Indeed it is. The Peel Rise stream, just a 15-minute stroll back up from Aberdeen. Seen here a lovely afternoon after summer rains. Wan Chai Gap. Down the hill, you're in Wan Chai. The reforestation of Hong Kong since the 19th century, and especially since the 1950s, is a remarkable chronicle of sustained government action to restore a denuded landscape. Using exotic species initially, reforestation pioneered the ground conditions that later allowed native species to self-propagate, such as here with these gorgeous backlit fan palms, a nesting place for bats, and much beloved of mammal experts. Mount Austin on the peak, misty light in spring. An absolutely unforgettable morning on Jardine's Lookout. I'd in fact gone to take long distance panoramas. It all hazed over and I was frustrated and almost a little angry with myself. But then this happened. These wonderful clouds moved in off the sea, monsoon clouds at their very best. And here was all the drama of atmospherics that when the air is clear, Hong Kong can deliver still quite brilliantly. Another stream, Pok Fulham Valley, butterflies in profusion. Often places like this to me are so beautiful, it's hard to find the will to pick up my gear and photograph them. Why not just gaze into those pools? In 1993, when I began photographing in Hong Kong, there were 21 country parks. Today, there are 23, covering some 40% of the land area. In the same period, the number of interpretive trails has doubled. The number of park visitors has increased by 30%. Today, in place of none at all, there are some 400 remote control cameras scattered around the country parks, recording the movements of all the fauna, the mammals, and other wildlife that inhabit the hills. Golden, beautiful Sheko, here with added luster on a fine winter's afternoon with golden light shafting down. Just a stroll from the Sheko village. And a favorite place, Cape D'Agula. Cape D'Agula, site of Swire Institute of Marine Science, set up in 1990 with support from Swire and operated by the University of Hong Kong. It was here, marine ecological research done here at the Swire Institute, that that led to the gazetting in 1996 of Cape D'Agula Marine Reserve and three marine parks. Then a great leap forward for marine conservation. One of the many dawns around Hong Kong. And now the northeast, those wonderful peninsulas of Plover Cove and Sai Kung. In the 1930s, a keen hillwalker wrote of Sai Kung, "Here sea and land meet in a tangle of headlands, islands, and inlets. You may go for miles without seeing anything of man's handiwork, for here hillsides fall steeply into the sea." And so they do today, and so I witnessed them this evening looking to Ma and Shan, and in fact without any gear, so beautiful was the place, I simply stayed there the night with a few oranges, some water, and captured the wonderful dawn the next day out over Mers Bay. Farming declined in Hong Kong from the 1970s, and still more so in the 1980s. Over time, given the regenerative power of nature, the old farming areas, particularly wetlands, grew back, developed some of Hong Kong's richest ecosystems and habitats. Yet these areas, all lying outside the country parks, remain unprotected. Photographing in these so-called valley excisions, I was often perplexed, indeed, often saddened. With many others, I mourned the loss of countryside to ad hoc development, often to the dumping of waste. The precise details of what a small ecosystem is, a complex of tiny creatures and bigger organisms living there. Bride's Pool, that lovely waterfall near Wu Gao Tang, here after steady summer rain. Perhaps of all these photographs, my favorite. From Tu Tang Lung, looking out over Mers Bay. I'd been there twice before, but air pollution had veiled the view and destroyed the image I wanted. Returned again on a clear summer weather, bedded down at 10 p.m. at the base of the hill, heard a barking deer that night, and the deer seemed to say to me, "Ed, it's right to be here. Keep taking your photographs." 4 a.m. began the ascent, pitch dark, no moon, a very dangerous gravelly slope, bathed in sweat, heaving for breath. And at 5 a.m., pitched up onto the top of Tu Tang Lung. And then this wonderful scene evolved in front of me. There are seasonal changes here, not the glories of the English spring or the red leaves of northeastern America, but the grasses change color. And perhaps no winter hill is more beautiful than here, Sharp Peak in Sai Kung. Clearwater Bay Peninsula with its lovely hexagonal rhyolite rocks. So striking are the Sai Kung rocks. And this is great news, that in 2009, its most geologically significant promontories and islands were declared Hong Kong's first geopark, and there's an article about the park in the city section of the Morning Post today. A real tribute to the vision and resolve of the country parks, to recognize that the rocks are an incredibly valuable part of Hong Kong's scenic topography. The same peak, another season, a different dawn, daybreak over Hong Kong. The heritage of the Hakka villages scattered through the northeast, far too little has been written about them, each in their own way fascinating, sadly all now like Kop Tong here in close to terminal decline, the uninhabited ones. Dai Long Wan, that beautiful bay, and the Ninepins. The Wilson Trail, about which we once did a small book, extends for 78 kilometres south to north. Lord Wilson, governor of Hong Kong from 87 to 92, and for whom the Wilson Trail is named, was a keen hiker. And he was an astute, sympathetic, observer of local life. In the foreword to Hong Kong Nature Landscapes, he writes, "Hong Kong's countryside is a crucial element of what makes Hong Kong such a unique place." And Lord Wilson reflects on, I quote, "the restorative effects of Hong Kong's countryside." How right he is. Every morning, long before dawn, here at Tsing Mun and in all the other country parks, morning walkers, as they're called, mostly elderly, gather. Their lives mostly of very modest means, almost always of space-cramped flats, are immeasurably enriched by these surroundings, by the country park's flora and fauna, trails, lookouts, visitor centres, vistas, by the sheer blessed space of the outdoors. Violet Hill along the trail, Tsing Mun in its winter bare banks colours, and that glorious escarpment where the photograph of the rangers was taken, Hat Sin. It is almost impossible to believe on Pat Sin that you live in Hong Kong. Wild, grand, dangerous. I once had heat stroke there and somehow got myself off the range. And yet you look down to the urban expanse of Shenzhen in the east. Shenzhen has changed enormously since I took these photographs. Pat Sin has changed not at all, bar some further process of reforestation, etc. Kadiri Farm, the farm, truly a jewel of Hong Kong. In the 1970s, when Kadiri Farm was still only half vegetated, a visitor observed, "The farm in all seasons provides something to admire." And so it does today, as friends from the farm here know. You can see a pavilion hidden amidst the trees. The essence of Kadiri Farm, the interplay of nature and man, the harmony of the setting reflecting Kadiri Farm's conservation mission and objectives today. Tam O Shan, seen from the farm, autumn colours. The riot of vegetation of plant species by Orchid Haven, halfway up the Kadiri Farm slopes. The most special place in all the farm, for me at least. Yet, to appreciate Kadiri Farm today, one must step back in time, back to the hard-pressed Hong Kong of the 1950s, when the farm was set up to help poor peasants. Then, as photographs reveal, Kadiri's deep-set valley was utterly barren, a wild of boulders, rocks, scree, with not a tree in sight. Yet, with the philanthropic vision of the Kadiri family and the botanical grasp, the care and passion of Sir Horace, over decades, Kadiri Farm was transformed. A delightful glen, but extremely difficult to photograph in the rain when it looks best. The seasonal changes of the farm. And my pleasure, my love, really, of photographing small details, far more interesting, far more challenging to photograph than great landscapes. Can the value of Hong Kong's natural setting be quantified? Or do such values involve deeper attitudes and beliefs? How many flora species grow here? They can be counted. And with dedicated field research, as at Kadiri Farm, the fauna species can be counted, the mammals that inhabit here, like barking deer, wild boar, pangolins, with the birds, the reptiles, the amphibians, and so on, the innumerable insects, down to the tiny ground organisms. But can we meaningfully quantify the value of the species, the habitats, the nature landscapes? A fitting memorial to the far-sighted Kadiri brothers, but it reveals a sobering truth. From the summit, standing above the nature haven of Kadiri Farm, one looks to the northwest, across the plain, out towards Deep Bay, Kamtin, out to where, just 40 years ago, traditionally cultivated, carefully husbanded fields lay. Today, in place of that patchwork of fields, one gazes across ramshackle development, wasteful land use, concrete life. I started my Hong Kong life on Lama Island and lived there incredibly happily for 5 years. A place without cars, with a village community, with wonderful views. Here, Lama at dawn, the Taithong Channel. I always call this Lama Classic. A friend told me about the place. I returned there almost daily when I lived in Lama, and countless times since. Our bottom line calculations, the bigger the better, in the right color, of course, the only or the best way to value a place. How much should we value other things, especially in a city as crowded, hurried, and stressful as Hong Kong? The embrace of a Chinese banyan, that wild, wild island, Po Toi. I took an Australian friend one day there to the cliffs, and he jumped back and said, "This place is worth $1 million. The beach at Phan Lao and Lan Tau. Phan Lao seen from another angle. The Great Bay of Tai Tam from Stanley Mound. And back to that favorite place, Cape D'Aguila, a few days after a typhoon. During the Song Dynasty, the landscape painter Gua Ji asked himself, wherein lies the reason that a good man so much loves landscapes? His answer reflected the same elements of nature we see today, those tangible, those equally valuable intangible aspects of nature and its appreciation and enjoyment that so enrich Hong Kong. Guo Ji's answer was this: it is because the message of the forests and the streams, the companionship of the mists and the clouds, are always in his dreams. Thank you all.
Ed, thank you very much for a really interesting discussion, and those beautiful, beautiful photographs. We do have a good 15 minutes for Q&A. Would ask that you identify yourself if you're one of the few people in the room who doesn't know Ed, or even if you are, do identify yourself. Let me just ask the first question. I rather cynically suggested at the outset that these photographs, book like Hong Kong's Wild Places, could not be taken, could not be published today because of air pollution. Am I right about that? We do have usually a couple months of very clear weather in the summer. Were these photographs taken uniformly year-round back in the mid-90s? You alluded to having problems with air pollution then, too.
The photographs were taken between 1993 and 2003. Tom is partly right and partly wrong. Air pollution and the lack of visibility has certainly become worse, as we all know, over those years. But in point of fact, even when I first came here in 1993, the photographs were taken on very, very highly selected days. And the story of Tu Tang Lung, the beautiful dawn over Mers Bay, is the truth. I'd been there twice before I'd simply given up because pollution hazed over the bay. And in fact, if you look at Hong Kong's Wild Places, the book Tom mentioned, there are photographs in it, a very memorable one taken on Ma'an Shan when I was sleeping overnight on the range. And looking across Sha Tin Valley, the whole valley was buried under a blanket of pollution. I was above that blanket of pollution, and a trick of light of the setting sun, in fact, turned the blanket of air pollution almost black. So yes, it would be harder. Yes, it could still be done, but you have to be incredibly selective on your days.
Any questions from the floor? And if you're sitting in a spot where I can't see you, just grab the staff's attention. Francis, please.
Francis Moriarty, FCC Board. Ed, first of all, I can remember sitting with you. It probably would have been on 93 or 94 downstairs here at the FCC, looking at your prints then, and hardly being able to believe that I was seeing the Hong Kong that I lived in. And I don't know if many people realize the effect that you've had on Hong Kong's consciousness and on its image of itself and on public policy in Hong Kong over the past 15 years. It's been an enormous contribution. And I think it's a real tribute to your personal dedication and the quality of your work. And I hope that that's well understood, because I think it should be. You've been very self-effacing, but your contribution has been huge. I'd also like to say that each year in the Human Rights Press Awards here, we are increasingly seeing photographs that seem to fall outside the normal realm of human rights. They're environmentally based. There seems to be some growing sense among people, not merely in Hong Kong, but we're getting this from contributors elsewhere in the whole Asia region, some growing sense that in some way the environment and human rights are linked. And I'm wondering if you share that sentiment, if you see the link, if you could address it in some way.
Francis, thank you for those very kind comments. They're much appreciated. I might come back to something connected with the country parks in a moment. Yes, that's obviously a wonderful thing, that people are seeing the power of images as they've been used in other places to bring out issues that are of this kind of nature. I would actually say the most important thing in Hong Kong as a kind of human right, if you like, I alluded to with the photograph of Wilson Trail and Tsing Mun, is that the truth is, the reality is, most people here live unbelievably circumscribed lives in terms of space, living conditions, and so on. And the country parks, although they obviously have very, very important nature aspects of preserving the flora and fauna and ecosystems and so on, I would say in Hong Kong matter far more as escapes for people to get out into. And Dr. Wong Fuk Yee is here, previously director of country parks. And I would have to say the thing that gave me the most joy in the years I was taking the photographs was seeing what the country parks were doing with their own incredibly good, very wide-ranging, but much more grassroots Friends of the Country Parks publication. That, I believe, make Hong Kong people far more of this great resource. Your previous point about the use and benefit of my photos, that's very kind. I certainly, myself, have a lot of pride in the photographs I took of marine rubbish, of shotcrete, of degradation, of awful trails, of above all of marine rubbish. I probably have the world's biggest library of marine rubbish photographs, which later I would say, with all my photographs later this year, are to be donated to the University of Hong Kong Libraries, and Dr. Tony Ferguson is here. When the editor Jonathan Fenby of the Morning Post retired, he did write a very nice thing in one of their in his farewell editorial, saying that he dated environmental consciousness in Hong Kong to when my paired photos of air pollution, identical places on very clear and very polluted days, had been published. And ditto Ming Bao. Ming Bao did a great deal of publishing of my photographs of degradation.
A question in the back corner.
Thank you. My name is John Antweiler. I work for Wells Fargo Bank. I'm a great hiker, and I love your photographs. I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about your perception of the Hong Kong government's commitment to preserving the country parks and protecting them. I speak from the perspective of getting all sorts of emails from outfits like Friends of Sai Kung, which continuously talk about infringement on the country park by developers or by the government, widening of highways and that sort of thing.
Very good question. Let me put in one important qualification. This book really is a retrospective. I've not been closely involved in conservation and countryside issues for really a number of years. The Foundation's been far more involved in publishing historical photographs. So, on record, I don't follow the minutiae of what's going on these days as I once did. The first thing I'd say is it's really important, and it's very, very easy to overlook this, to distinguish, as I did in the opening of my talk, between the lands inside the country parks and the lands outside the country parks. Because unless you look closely at the borders on the wonderful government countryside maps, you often think you're in a country park and you're not. Primarily, that's in the lowland valleys. Now, in the country parks, by and large, I would say from... But with this qualification, that my knowledge, my precise knowledge, is not up to date. I think they've done wonderful things in the great increase of pathways. I used to complain bitterly about putting in, say, concrete steps, because I loved sort of sweating it up a gravelly slope. But in reality, the concrete steps probably, for the vast majority of people, are what they want. And what we should be doing in Hong Kong is increasing access for the vast majority of people, not for people like me. I can go out and clamber around in the remote places where there will never be concrete paths. But by and large, I'd say the country parks have done a great deal in interpreting, widening their interpretive centres and all these kind of things. The valleys are a different issue. And here you have a whole great gamut of things from, I know the development issues around Sai Kung, I don't know the details. Those are not in the country parks. The issue with the valleys is that, putting it very simply, when the country parks were established in the 1970s, the villages were farmed in living villages primarily, and as in any other society, Australia, America, where you generally declare nature reserves, you enshrine the rights of the prior residents. What happened, and also bear in mind that the land regulations are incredibly complex. They date back to 1900, the cadastral surveys of the creation of the new territories. Very, very complex. What happened in essence afterwards is the farming ended, the native ecology grew back, ecological studies increased, people became far more aware of it, hiking became a more visible thing, people became more critical. Meanwhile, of course, there are rogue developers who remain rogue developers. But in broad essence, my answer would be the country parks perform an incredible service for Hong Kong, both in their management of their land resource and their interpretation of it through the land and all their publications, but the valleys remain complex and, if you like, disputed territories.
Sorry, just to add a little to that, Vicky Osorio, very long time, grew up in Hong Kong. I don't know the specifics, but my husband's cousin, the Barreto family, are proceeding along lines to try to maintain their area of botanical interest in Tai Po Khao, and this may be a precedent as far as retaining these areas that aren't in country parks but are of very special interest. I think Auntie Gloria's book on orchids is also coming out soon. So just a little point of interest. I mean, Jason may know a little bit more than me. I'm just a relative. Thank you.
Yes, Gloria Barreto was a lifetime resident of Hong Kong who died some 4 or 5 years ago, 3 years ago, closely involved with Kadiri Farm, where she did incredible work on orchids. And her work, I gather, is now being brought to publication by her family with Kadiri Farm. Kadiri Farm, of course, being a... different to the parks, I mean, it's fundamentally different, but really the focal point of, in any one place, of ecological research in Hong Kong, I would think it's fair to say, because all their effort is concentrated on, for a start, a very small piece of land, really, on research, education, conservation here in South China, whereas, of course, the country parks manage an infinitely greater, more varied land resource scattered right across Hong Kong.
We do have time for at least another question, maybe two. Let me just interject one now. I'm surprised I don't know this. Maybe you told me and I forgot, but I don't think so. We all know your photographs and the work, but how did you become so interested in photography? You spent a lot of summers here as a child. Were you photographing Hong Kong back then? Was it something that evolved in Australia?
It really did evolve in Australia. Some people may know I grew up in Hong Kong until I was about 18, and the family left, and I left, and went off and studied and became a teacher and other things. The Hong Kong photographs really truly do connect with Australia, because in Australia I'd photographed three books retracing explorers' journeys right across Australia, three of the truly great mid-19th century explorers, Eyre, Sturt and Stewart. And those books were really based on a very detailed library research retracing precisely their journeys across Australia, photographing the landscapes they saw, which generally they only just endured, given the terrain and climate, and then bringing them together as stories about landscapes seen through history. And it was with that mindset that I came back to Hong Kong. And I'm glad to say, I think there are some people from Swire here, with the great help of Swire, to do Hong Kong's nature landscapes. And the whole point of that book was to do, again, very detailed library research at the University of Hong Kong, special collection, Hong Kong collection, going out into the field to see how that research connected with the realities on the ground. This is incidentally explained in the introduction to this book where I look back. And then, of course, the photography that... Tom's question is a good one, because I'm not strictly a photographer simply looking at landscape. I'm a photographer looking at landscape through the prism of research and a great deal of advice from all the nature experts in Hong Kong. Historians like Elizabeth Sin here, Jason Wordy, Rob Baxter, all these people who... and above all, people, Gary Aids, people, Kadiri Farm. So the photographs are really more a synthesis of prior knowledge, landscape interpretation, knowing always that the photographs will later be married with words.
Is there one last question from the floor? If not, I will ask it. So it's your last chance.
Yeah, relentless journalist.
I am. Ernst.
The work you have done here in Hong Kong, is it having it taken as example of these landscapes you highlighted across the border on the mainland? Obviously, Hong Kong has these great landscapes out there. And how is the landscapes protected in adjoining territories?
Sorry, are you asking me, have I photographed landscapes in China?
Yes.
Mainland China?
Especially near Hong Kong, kind of.
No.
Is there any... We tend to go direct to Shenzhen and then to Guangzhou, but what is the landscape, the hiking out kind of across the border?
The answer is, with regret, not at all, primarily because I was so closely occupied with things in Hong Kong. But in northern Guangdong, speak to Jason Wordy here, who takes people there regularly. There is some wonderful countryside, but I myself never photographed it, with regret. I really wouldn't want to go into that. You could, the Kadiri Farm, if you want to continue your dialogue, the people are over here. They have very active programs in various parts of South China that are primarily, correct me if I'm wrong, to do with bringing greater awareness of ecology and protecting landscapes and assisting communities in China. Fair enough?
Francis wanted to ask one as well.
Yeah, apologies for two bites at the cherry here, Ed. The closed border area, the government is making plans and there's different competing proposals how to use that area, but much of it must be fairly pristine because nothing's been allowed up there. Have you been in that area? Have you photographed that area? Can you speak at all about it and what its worth might be to preserve it as is rather than as a development site?
Do you mean, Francis, on
the whole closed border area up between here and Shenzhen?
No, I've not been there. I've not photographed it. I've looked down on it from the high peaks in the northern New Territories. But again, what I'd stress is that is an area outside the country park. So I really know next to nothing about it, except I could hazard a guess and say that, like most of those little used parts of the New Territories, if they've not been severely degraded by, concrete overkill, container yards, et cetera, Most of those areas are remnant farmland that may still be partly farmed, may not be. Truthful answer, I don't know.
If I may ask the third final question. I think you mentioned that the foundation has been focusing a lot on republishing old photographs, Hedda Morrison's work. This book, of course, is a retrospective of landscape photos. Are you through with landscape photography? Will you continue to do more books along the lines of Hedda Morrison, or do you think you could get back into landscape photography, perhaps in other areas of the region? Or is it something that you've done?
No, yes or no. I'm not sure. What I mean to say is, I guess I'm a photographer and a writer. I've kind of morphed into a small publisher, if you like. Photography will always be what's closest to my heart. There's no question about that. And yes, I hope to continue. It's a question of balancing time, of getting the resources we really need to grow, so I'm freed up to do what I should do most of, which is what I do best, not other things. And yes, I do hope to take photographs. What I would say is, going into the future, I really do find the small details of nature, as actually most photographers do as they get older, not because they're less willing to carry the heavy gear up the hills, you can always have an assistant, but somehow they become more challenging, actually, more interesting, the details of vegetation, of ecology, the relationships of things.
Please join me in thanking Ed for his talk today. As is customary, we have a small token for Ed. I was up at the crack of dawn getting this together. It's a bag of FCC marine rubbish. like many of Ed's friends, I'm sure you've been forced to pile it up on the beach for better photographic effect. So thanks again, Ed. Sorry, I need to add, books, of course, are on sale if you don't have them, and Ed is happy to stay up here and sign your books if you would like.
And could I just add very quickly, the piling up of rubbish on beaches is complete lies. And with great pleasure for the FCC, a copy of Hong Kong Nature Landscapes.
That was
good. Great.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you very much.
Okay, well, I hope that all went well.
We just need a quick photo.